We're back. Stripe Show podcast on a Tuesday. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Back in the saddle. 2 weeks off for some vacation. Needed to get away, clear my head a little bit. You know, it hasn't been the best year for me in picking winners. I got one out there so far. So I had to, you know, kind of take a look in the mirror. Head out
like
west.
Rory.
Yeah, take a look in the mirror, examine what I'm doing, and I feel like I've kind of figured some things out. So here I am. I'm back in Florida, back in front of the mic. It's Tuesday. Our man, Keith Stewart. I know you do that a lot, don't you? Look in the mirror and kind of self-reflect, and that kind of helps you pick all these winners that you do.
Yeah, sounds good.
hey, we gotta catch up here for a minute before we get to the Open Championship.
Yeah,
because you
texted to unpack.
Yeah, there is, because you texted me as soon as our boy Davis Thompson won. Because we look, this podcast has been a fan of David Thompson for a long time, and there was no one happier than me to see that guy get into the winner's circle. We've been waiting on it, and he finally did. Did you hit that?
Oh yeah, 28-1.
Yeah,
100%. And the best part about that one was when the Sunday sweat kicked in, the guy shot 29 on the front. It was like,
I know it.
All right, time to go to the pool. I'm done. That's great. It was awesome. And you know what, though? Like, all of those things that you and I have been talking about since last October, September, when we started like really pushing Davis, they all kind of just swept together. Yeah. And he's played well since. So he should have a good week this week. He's hitting the ball. He's hitting the driver really good. And he looked confident, which is nice.
Well, the driver is interesting this week, right? Can you overpower Royal Troon? Those are some of the questions that I have for you when we get to the golf course. But before we get to that, we had, Bobby Mack last week. I mean, how about this guy? I mean, he wins the Canadian Open. He wins the Canadian Open with his dad on the back. And now he goes and wins the Scottish Open, where he was born and raised. I mean, this guy is on fire. And he's probably still hungover, and who knows if he'll show up Wednesday for his press conference, which was moved back for Monday.
Yeah, I have a sour taste in my mouth.
You didn't have Bobby Mack, did you?
Well, I had three guys in the top four, and I did not have full disclosure. I had Rye, I had Im, and I had the kid, and I didn't have Adam Scott, and it was Adam Scott's tournament to win at that point. And the PGA in me went absolutely ballistic with what happened there on the 16th hole. It's just, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't understand how that happens. Well, again, first of all, if you're watching the video and it's circling all over social media, it's not about the drop. Okay. That guy takes a huge practice swing, pulls like he's in there with a sickle, like cutting down crops at the end of the year. Then he goes and takes his stance in the same place where he just, you know, removed all that.
That's legal.
You could take a, wait, oh, hang on. I could take a practice swing where I'm going to take my stance. Cause that's new to me.
Okay. I'm pretty
sure. You cannot build a stance. You cannot build a stance in the rules of golf. Okay. You cannot.
All right.
That is against the rules.
All right.
You look it up. You cannot build a, you cannot improve your lie, which includes the area of where the ball is, your swing, and your stance, right? That guy goes in and he hacks the thing out. And then he's quoted on the feed where he says, hey, I never would have even known this sprinkler head was here had I not taken that practice swing, right? So forget the drop. I'm not upset about the drop. If you're on a sprinkler head, you get a drop. That is totally fine by me. What I don't get is that you don't get to go into the weeds and just start hacking around. Like, okay, so wait a second. Does that mean I get to go into the bushes and like back my way in and just break down all the branches or take a practice swing and like knock down, you know, a row of hedge bushes and then go in and take my stance? Of course not. You can't do that. And then the guy goes in there and then he gets a drop. And of course he makes eagle, goes 3-3-3 and wins. And don't get me wrong. It's a wonderful story. He really wanted to win in his home country. I'm sure he did not know what he was doing, taking that practice swing and then finding it. I am not saying there is any intent there whatsoever, but you literally can't do that. Right.
Yeah, I think you can over there. I because there's no way they would not enforce that in that situation, right? If that was the case.
I
mean, you can build your stance. I mean, you can move loose impediments and things like that.
Whoa.
I can pick up grass and throw it up in the air. And
you and I are not talking about the same thing.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I can pick up grass and throw it up in the air and see where the wind blows it.
Whoa. Are you even closely comparing ripping up a finger grasp of grass versus what that guy did?
What I'm saying, and I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that he was within the rules over there doing that. I'm going to get to the bottom of that. We'll do some more research and we'll come back to that. But I'm pretty sure over there he was within the rules of what he did.
Now, there's a famous ruling way back in the day where Craig Stadler hit a ball from under a tree. I forget what tournament was at, but he laid down a towel, right? And he was penalized and ended up losing the golf tournament because he laid a towel down and he knelt on it just to protect his pants. And he was penalized for that because it was improving his area of stance, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they have since changed that rule in 2019 to the point where you could do something like that. And they've changed a lot of other rules. But there is no way that you could go into a situation where you can take a practice swing and hack out anything where you're going to either stand or swing or where the lie of the ball is. You cannot do that, right? And the fact that he did that and then just stepped in and then found the sprinkler head, and he said it, I'm quoting him, I never would have known, when he's talking to his caddy, I never would have known this was here if I hadn't taken that practice swing. That by definition is improving your lie. Correct me if I'm wrong. That is improving your lie.
Not improving your lie. It's improving your stance.
No. Lie includes area of intended swing and your stance.
Okay.
Improving your lie, according to the rules of golf, includes all those three things.
All right. Why do you hate Bobby Mack?
I don't hate Bobby Mack. I think it's a wonderful story.
Hey, do you know what his golf coach's name is?
Nope.
Simon Shanks.
Oh man,
Simon Shanks is up there with
Craig Shankland, right?
Yeah, Simon Shanks. He's a good teacher. He works with a few guys over there, and I was DMing back and forth. I congratulated him, and he said I'll come on the pod as soon as my feet re-enter and hit the ground again. So I'm sure those guys are having some fun. What a year! I mean, put the ruling aside, we'll dig deeper into that. But 100%. I mean, what a year! My goodness, this young man has found it. And, you know, I made a post yesterday and I'm going to break this down further. We're going to launch a pretty cool pod tomorrow on kind of a lot of different swings, guys that are doing well right now in professional golf. And this is one of them. It's kind of a classical old back, you know, swing where, you know, he's got that little reverse C look at the end. And I don't know, I like him. I like the way he goes about his craft. And he didn't have some great fortune a year ago. And obviously now that's kind of come back full circle this year. But a couple wins later, he kind of strikes me as someone who's just kind of stayed the course. He kind of digs it out of the dirt, a little of a free will spirit. Obviously he likes to have a few beverages here and there and celebrate. And things have come together, you know, this year for him, with a couple wins and becoming now, I don't want to say one of the top players in the world yet. You know, he's not in that top upper echelon yet of Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele. We're not ready to go there yet, but he's certainly climbing the ranks and a cool personality for the game, you know, to be up there now and another fresh name and face to talk about. So congrats to him and Davis Thompson, our man. Who probably didn't have as many alcohol beverages, you know, maybe, you know, he seems more like they probably had some sushi, you know, some tea and those kinds of things afterwards. And he was back to work the next morning but maybe not, you know, maybe he was going after it too. All right. Fourth major of the year.
Real quick. I got a question I want to ask you about Bobby Mack, right? But to tie a bow on that, number one, I don't believe the guy had intent. He was just playing to win. So God bless him. The rules are the rules. Number two, at the beginning of the year, I loved Bobby Mack. I drafted him for my season-long fantasy team. So these are things that I didn't expect two wins, mind you, but I expected him to play well over here on tour because he earned the right through points like a Nikolai Højgaard to come over here. It's not just like he's getting sponsors exemptions to be here, right? He was great on the DP World Tour last year. He was high enough in points to earn the right to be here. And my last point, well, and he has a great Open record too. So if he's not too hungover, he could play good this week. But my question to you is this, because like with Akshay, Zalatoris, and now I'm looking at that video of Bobby Mack, do you think some of these young guys have too much side bend through impact?
Well,
because I look at that, and because like Bobby Mack reminds me of that caddy view that you still see with like Akshay, and not Zalatoris anymore because he's had the back surgery, but pre-back surgery, right? Like these guys have so much side bend. Do you think that that's an issue down the road?
No doubt. There's no doubt. Like you have to be concerned with some of that. Like, okay. I mean, Will Zalatoris has gone through it, right? You know, I think Ricky Fowler had too much and it kind of was pinching him a little bit.
Interesting.
You know, there's Jason Day, right? And I think maybe a little bit of how he was using his pelvis and inside bend. You get into players like Joaquin Niemann, right?
He's another one.
Sam Bennett is another one that takes on a lot of that. And I look at that, I wouldn't say that's a tremendous amount. I wouldn't put that in those categories. Okay. But it is kind of that classical leg drive, you know, where you get lateral, a lot of leg drive, lateral. You do take on a little bit of early side bend, but I wouldn't say it like it's a great deal. You can see the heads kind of laying down. It's not exactly what's, I would say, taught in the modern game.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of always the way he's went about it. I'll be curious to ask Simon about the direction. There's another guy that he worked with before that I'm drawing a blank on what his name is. He's done a lot of work with Bobby too. So I'll be interested to kind of see what they do here, but it's just a move that excessive leg drive, lateral, you don't see, tremendous amount in the modern game. So it's kind of a throwback in my eyes. Now
guys like that drive it good.
Yeah. Yeah. Fourth major. And he's long, right? I mean, Bobby can hit it. I mean, he's out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He moves it. Yeah.
How about these three names? All right. How about these three names? Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters.
Yep.
Xander Schauffele wins the PGA. Bryson DeChambeau wins the U.S. Open. Not bad, you know.
I mean, it's a good year.
Not a bad run of majors, right? You got two on the PGA Tour. You got one coming from the LIV Tour, and now we roll up into the fourth major of the year, and it's Royal Troon's been around forever. I think it was built back in 1878. If my research is accurate, this is the 10th time that we've hosted the Open Championship here. And of course, most recently back in 2016, Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson. I can remember where I was sitting during this duo, right? Who they kind of got that little window. I mean, if you listen to podcasts, most podcasts have talked about this, but I remember it very clearly. Like there was that little window. It was some bad weather, right? And there was just that little window of guys that really played well where they didn't get the bulk of it. And these two guys were right in the middle of that. And so they took advantage. And they didn't play like in, you know, sunshine and 70 degrees and no wind. I mean, they still played in some bad conditions, but nothing like the rest of the field. But I can remember, you know, these guys separate. We're sitting there on Sunday and we were just right down the road here on Interstate 1 down towards the World Golf Village. There's a English pub down here and this lady owns it and she's ornery and, you know, it's this and that, but they got the best fish and chips. And it's just, you feel like you're there. And you know, you put on the Open, that's where we have our brunch. And I remember just sitting there watching these guys like back and forth, great shot after great shot. I mean, it was unbelievable. The golf down the stretch from these two. And of course, Henrik Stenson ended up winning it. All right. So now we fast forward and it looks like Royal Troon, maybe a little bit longer, about 160 yards or so they've added to it, but it's not like an overly long course. I'm curious though, I'm going to give you the stage, you know, give us your thoughts and the research here about Royal Troon. And speak to me, Keith, specifically about the driver. I mean, do we have guys that can overpower this and carry some of these pot bunkers that are out there and really just, you know, bring it to its knees? Or should we lean a little bit more like we saw last year with Brian Harman, which was just kind of more fairways and greens, you know, don't have to overpower anything.
Yeah. You know what? I think it's been an interesting week so far there at Troon. And just to kind of take a very top line view of all of this, Troon is one of the more target oriented American style Lynx golf courses, if I could use that phraseology, right? It's the exact opposite of like what you're thinking about when you think of Lynx golf and you think of St. Andrews, and it's just kind of like a barren wasteland. There's a lot more framework here. It's a lot more like a Royal Liverpool, like we saw last year. It's a lot more like point and shoot than it might be at some of these other venues. Now, that being said, it is also one of the most wind affected or weather affected sites, because it's out there on the West Coast, Turnberry being another. I mean, the ones on the East Coast of Scotland are almost a little more protected, because most of the, you know, the weather comes around the globe in that direction. And what we're seeing this week already is that the way the course is laid out, you play the front nine in one direction, basically like a true Lynx style course. And then you play the back nine coming the other. So you play one through six toward the southeast, and then the next five holes kind of jumble you around as you turn around. You change direction five times, and then you come back 13 through 18, which is normally into the wind and some of the tougher tests there. So you score early, hold on, and then really hold on at the end. But what's interesting about this week so far is that the wind is coming out of the southwest, which means it's almost blowing directly across the golf course. And the reason it made me think of this for the answer was that all of these guys would have prepared ahead of time, knowing if they were into the wind or with the wind, what bunkers they could carry, what their game plan was going to be off the tee. And now with suddenly this crosswind that we're looking at for basically the duration of the tournament, unless things should change rapidly, it's going to be very interesting how these guys plan this thing out. I think these guys are going to attack this place. I think the Rorys and the Brysons and the longer players are going to attack this place in a way with which we haven't seen golfers do that before. I think Scotty will do the same. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, I remember this quote last week watching the Scottish Open, and Rory ripped another drive like 340 straight down the middle of the fairway. And there was a cut line there, and it was like literally on the cut line almost the whole time, the flight of the ball when it landed. And I think it was IBF or it might've been Trevor, but he said, like, he goes, "That's the straightest club in his bag." Right. And the modern driver and the modern golf ball has allowed those guys to get there. So I think that we're going to see a lot more aggressiveness out of these guys that can hit it far. I think the plotters will still be the plotters. I think that driving the golf ball is going to be one of your three keys. I think you're going to have to be really good scoring from 100 yards and in. And I think you're going to have to be good with an iron over 200 yards. And I think thirdly, like any British Open, you're going to need to be able to lag putt and or use the putter from some interesting situations and be able to score very well. The greens there are pretty flat. The bunkers are super deep because, again, it sits along the seaside, the Firth of Clyde, and it's super wind affected. So if you can get the ball in position to score and you're a relatively good lag putter and wedge player, I think that you can do very well this week. And the weather looks like, the wind doesn't look crazy bad, mid-teens. It's just it's going to be a cross, which is kind of be something the guys are going to have to adapt to. And that's really where I'm handicapping this thing currently as we watch the weather day by day.
Yeah. And it can change, right? And we know, you know, what we talk about right now could be very different when they tee it up on Thursday. We can talk about it Wednesday night and they can come out there and it can be completely different Thursday morning. And then it can be completely different, you know, 3 hours later. So it really does depend on the wind. Really interesting with this course, like historically you look at it, the front nine usually is much easier. I mean, you know, you can see a guy go out 3, 4, 5 under, no problem here. And then they make the turn and it gets difficult. I mean, starting on 9, you look at 9, 10, 11, 12. I mean, 11 is the hardest hole. 12 is the second hardest. 10 around the third hardest. And 9 is the fifth hardest. So you got 4 of the hardest holes right there. 9, 10, 11, 12. And then 15's a brute. That's the fourth hardest hole, 17, sixth hardest hole. So, I mean, you can see all the difficult holes are, you know, starting from 9 on. So just call it the back 9. So, you know, look, your guy can come out, you know, 2, 3, 4 under. You're like, oh my gosh, off I go. Okay. All right. Just wait a minute. I mean, you know, that's the golf course kind of starts to pick up about the 9th hole. And let's see where he sits once he gets to 13. Now, if he's still 3, 4 under par at that point, all right, you've got yourself, you know, a nice round going. So, you know, a little bit, just kind of a little bit of context on the course. You mentioned U.S. players doing well here. This being a little more like a U.S. kind of golf course. You look at the winners before Stenson. I mean, if Mickelson would have won, that would have been 7 straight at this place, American winners. So in 2004, remember Todd Hamilton, I remember 1997, Justin Leonard.
Oh yeah.
I did a golf channel show with Mark Calcavecchia. He won back in 1989 around the Open Championship. It was in 2016, I think, when we did that show. It kind of coincided with the Open Championship back in 2016. Maybe I should have called him, right, and got some insight on this golf course. 1982, Tom Watson, Tom Weisskopf, yep. Rest in peace, 1973. And then, of course, Arnold Palmer, rest in peace, 1962. So the Americans, look.
Yep.
All right.
Six straight Americans in majors, too.
Yep, six straight. And I think what we're getting at here, Keith, is yes, they're in Europe. Yes, it's link style golf.
Yeah.
But don't just assume that, hey, he grew up in Europe. He knows how to play link style golf. And this is link style golf. I mean, this is kind of an Americanized as it gets. So I think you got to be careful just assuming that where they're from, and just because they play on the European tour or whatever, and they've got experience, like, oh yeah, they got a big advantage over there. History tells you otherwise. Six of the last seven been U.S. winners. So I think that's really interesting. All right, let's get into it. We like to call this our first click. My man.
All right. I'm going down this road this week, and I don't do it very often. You know,
better
that.
Be an American player.
It is not, but I'm going down this road this week, and I'm not normally a Northern Irishman backer, but I'm going with Rory this week.
I was surprised.
Yep.
You sent me that text.
I think he's completely revitalized. I think he had a little rehab for a month there. I think he let some things go. The piff, the divorce rumors, the everything that's going on. I liked what I saw last week at the Scottish. I mean, this guy's so consistent in majors that I know this much. He'll be involved come Sunday. He will be involved. And we will sweat it out, you know? We will sweat it out. He's got nine top tens in his last 13 major starts. I mean, that's pretty good. Pretty good.
Do you think the slower greens play in psychologically, where you have some guys showing up there and saying, hey, this is I dig the slightly slower greens?
For sure. Yes. Okay. I think it allows certain players, like aggressive players, like a Rory or maybe a Finau, or guys that love to just a Victor would be another one. The guys that, you know, that bang it at the hole, Scotty would be another one. Tiger over the years, guys that go after the hole. I think it definitely makes them feel more confident and comfortable. Mm-hmm. So yes to your question.
All right. My first click.
Oh boy.
There he is. Colin Morikawa.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Great pick. Anybody playing better than this guy right now? And I know he hasn't quite cracked the winner's circle, but my goodness. I mean, you want to talk about a model of consistency. We're looking at nine straight top 16s right here.
Yeah.
He's been phenomenal in major championships.
Yeah,
I think the short game is going to play a factor for sure, right? You're going to have to get the ball up and down here. You're not going to be able to fake it. I think Morikawa has made some great progress in the world of short game. I don't think it is a weakness. When you look at him statistically, strokes gain around the greens, he is trending above average. He is gaining strokes. You go back to the PGA Championship where he finished fourth, he was positive six. You go back to the U.S. Open, he was positive 1.2. Of course, he was third at the Masters. I don't have that right in front of me, but I'm assuming he was pretty damn good there around the green. So Morikawa, the short game has been good, and it's been consistent, as has the improvement in his putting. And I got to give Stephen Swinney some credit, man. You know, I think when you look at Colin Morikawa post players, post really Valero, I'm going back here to the notes. You know, he wasn't putting great in the first part early in the year, the first third of the year. And then he got to the Masters and the putter started to take hold. And he has putted very well, including last week at the Genesis Open, where he was positive 4.1 with the putter. He was positive 1.3 around the greens. We know his iron game is elite. He's not going to overpower this thing, but his driver's been very good. Not quite as good last week as it has been. I don't know. I just, Morikawa right now, it seems very rounded to me. Yep. He is playing his best golf. He knows how to play clearly. Open style golf courses. So my first click is Mr. Morikawa.
He's 100% my second choice.
Okay.
For sure. For all those reasons above, and to answer your question, at the Masters, he was positive with the putter and around the green.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's just been, he's been exemplary in so many ways. And, you know, we just wonder, it just kind of goes to show you how hard it is to close. But everything you said about Colin is spot on. And I think he's super live this week.
Is it fair to say that Scheffler is under the radar right now this week?
For a variety of reasons, yes. Number one, we haven't seen him in a while. Number two, in three trips over there is what? His best is an eighth, and that was 3 years ago. And then the last couple have been outside the top 20. And the last major championship, he was T41. So I think all of those things combined kind of have him, and they're 5 hours ahead, right? So a lot of the media we're seeing is like after the fact. I think Scott, he's always kind of been under the radar, except that he's won six and eight starts, right? Like, I think you're right. I think he is under the radar.
Well, it's kind of interesting, right? I mean, you think about, you know, Scheffler won the Masters. I mentioned Bryson won the U.S. Open. I mean, both those guys aren't getting a lot of respect, really. You know, when you think about it, in the Open Championship, and both of them has played, obviously, great golf. And, you know, Bryson has played well on the LIV Tour, and obviously he's been unbelievable in the major championships, as has Scottie Scheffler winning six times, which someone on the show predicted. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like, all right, now you go over there and like, nah, we're good. We're gonna go elsewhere. Like, you went Rory, I went Morikawa. I think Schauffele would be, if he had to pick, the majority of people would pick probably Xander over those three because of his overall consistency. It's kind of interesting to me. You know, I mean, I'm fascinated. Bryson's just an intriguing figure anyway. I'm really, really fascinated to watch Bryson play this golf course. I mean, this could be, you know, obviously the wind dependent, right? How the wind hits. But it's going to be fascinating with some of these pot bunkers and him taking that driver and welling and seeing where these golf balls land in relationship to these pot bunkers and going. I'm just absolutely intrigued by what Bryson DeChambeau does. And I'll tell you what, man, you know, it's easy to say with Bryson, look, he can, you know, it's all about the driver. It's not. Bryson's one of the best putters in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Bryson is, his short game has improved. I just gave Colin Morikawa its due respect with short game. You got to give the same to Bryson.
Bryson's a good man.
Yep. The iron game work that he's done with Dan Dahlquist. I mean, come on, man. He this is a very well-rounded player. So,
I mean, he's one of two guys. There's only two guys that could finish top 10 in all four majors this year. One's Bryson, the other's Xander. Those are the only guys. Scotty can't, you know.
But Scotty's won six times. He's the number one player in the world, unanimous. And it just feels like, it just feels like those are the two guys. And it just feels like, all right, you know, like we're going to go elsewhere. You know, just from what I've been hearing and what I've been reading, you know, some, don't get me wrong, are on it, but just overall, it just feels like, nah, we can't bet them because they're dominant and this and that. Anyway.
Well, I agree with you because there's a lot of talk about Rory. There's a lot of talk about Tommy Fleetwood and these guys. And Tommy Fleetwood is no Scottie Scheffler. So no. I'm with you.
With you. And Ludwig, right? And Ludwig. I mean, I know Ludwig played well last week. Stumbled down the stretch on Sunday. This is his first Open Championship, right, Ludwig?
Yep.
So he has no experience. It just seems like we're overall, a lot of the narrative is trying to reach for Ludwig and Tommy.
Well, this is a betting show, right? And no one wants to bet or talk about Scotty at 5-1 or 4-1, whatever he is. Right. So he, you're right. He gets passed by, and it's a British Open, and Bryson's only been good at St. Andrews where the fairways are 200 yards wide. So this isn't wiregrass roulette like we had at Pinehurst. I mean, I think a lot of people are instantly just like pushing Bryson off to the side as if driver's the only thing he can hit off the tee and still win this thing. So, I mean, I think it's a really good point. I hadn't thought much about it, but you're right. You just don't see much content swirling around those two guys. And and they should be the two best players in the world right now.
I mean, if you had to pick between, let me give you three names. Okay.
All right, go for it.
Now, let me give you three names and you rank them on from a win perspective of if you had to, right?
So this is their potential to win at Troon.
Right. Potential okay. to win at Troon for you. I'm not saying you're going to bet it. I'm just saying if you had to rank
100%.
It.
Got it.
All right. So let's put Fleetwood in there with Tyrrell Hatton, who's obviously has had a good year and played good golf.
Yep.
And John Rahm.
Oh.
I mean, that's a lot to chew on right there.
Can I have D? None of the above.
Oh.
I think I would take Rahm there. Yeah. There's a way higher ceiling. I mean, the thing is with Fairway Jesus, which is what I love to call Tommy Fleetwood, right? Is that like he's got 7 wins on the DP World Tour, and because he's from England, everyone just assumes they're all like in England. They're not. He has 1 win at Glen Eagles in Scotland, mm-hmm. and then the rest of them are all in Dubai, and they're like he did in January, or they're in South Africa. I mean, they're all over the world, right? So like this idea that all of a sudden, like because he was good at Shinnecock and he's been good at a bunch of Opens and great at the Scottish Open, isn't necessarily that like Tommy Fleetwood is like some sort of links whisperer, you know?
Right.
And Tyrrell Hatton, who I've backed numerous times, who is an extremely good fit for this situation this week, coming off a win at Nashville and Live and playing some really nice golf, has yet to step up in big situations like a major championship. So for me, I think Rahm was the number one player in the world. I don't see Fleetwood or Hatton ever getting to that point in their career.
No.
So the ceiling on Rahm is much higher. And although by his standards, you'd say the Open Championship has been kind of mediocre for John Rahm, he's still his skill set is superior to those guys. So if you're giving me those three and I all feel like they're probably on a level playing field right now, I'm going to take Rahm every time.
Oh, no, wait a minute. You said, I mean, Rahm's done okay. I mean, he tied for second last year in the Open. He tied for third back in 21. Fleetwood, tied for 10 last year, T4 in 2022. He had a second in 19. And then Hatton, T20 last year, T11 in 2022, T6. And I mean, so all these guys, both of them, they've all had success. Rahm's had more. Rahm's got the higher set. I agree with that. But then if you look at the odds, you know, bunched in there and you go one more down, it's Victor Hovland. I think I would bet Hovland over all of them.
Ooh. Current,
I think I would take Hovland. Yeah, I do. I think Hovland, let's see, T13 last year, T4 the year before, T12. And we're talking
Hovland's been great in the Open. Yeah. He's been very good.
Comes in rested, man. You know, kind of reassured now with Joe Mayo and some of the stuff. I think I would go Hovland.
Hovland's given 2 strokes to the field every week with his short game. That's a lot to overcome in a major. And I get it that Rahm's had a really, really tough major season and he has a lot to prove this week, man. It would be Rahm or Victor, but that's, it's a good question to start with. I mean, you pick 3 great names and you add the fourth makes it only more complicated. I'm still going to go with Rahm and we'll move on.
All right. Now we're getting down into the 40. Steer us here. We're getting into these 40-1s. We got some interesting names in here. So I always like for you to steer the ship as we get down in here.
All right. Well, there's 3 guys down here that we always talk about when it comes to majors, and self-admittingly, they've all had frustrating years and they've had their moments, and one of them is trending more than other in majors, but I'll give you the same question. Would you go in this range of the 40s and low 50s? I mean, look how much Brooks Koepka's dropped.
Man.
Look at Patrick Cantlay and look at Cam Smith, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are guys that have tended to be big game hunters and show up, especially Brooks, especially Cam.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 3, who do you like?
Well, of course, you got to start. I mean, Cam Smith won back in 2022. Yeah. You know, Cantlay, not a great record at the Open Championship. Hasn't been a great season for him as well, although he has found a little form. The other one was what we had. You said
Brooksy
and Brooks. All right.
Yeah.
Not a great year for Brooks either. Made the cut last year, T64, missed the cut in 2022. And then he had you know, a couple good tournaments there. And so I
won at Oak Hill. He hasn't finished better than 17th in a major.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I worry about the driver with Cam here.
Oh yeah.
That I worry about. You have a bad driving week here and you're in that, and you're not, you know, you're in that gorse. It's over. So I'm going to go, I think I'll go. I mean, Koepka to me still possesses the highest. I'll go Koepka, Smith, Cantlay. I'm down on Cantlay. I go
all right, Koepka,
Smith, Cantlay.
One more name.
Okay.
Tony Finau. Does that change anything?
Well, I like Finau. Yeah, I like Finau. I mean, Finau's going to be a little chalky, I think. I like Finau. You know, Finau's playing really good golf right now. And I think of those four, I would take Tony. Yeah, I think Tony would be number one for me. I mean, I think this guy, obviously, he's got great length. His putter has been much better. I think the slower greens could be a potentially good thing for Tony.
Yep. He's got a good open record.
He does. Tony, you know, look, he's got a third. He's got a T9, a T15. Didn't miss the cut last year. But I think Finau right now is trending too. You know, Finau to me is playing with a lot of confidence.
Really
good. And of those four, I would definitely take Tony Finau. You know, one of the names, as we kind of continue to work down the board, a guy that's trending, a guy that's played his best golf right now, a guy that has a good open championship record. Where am I going? What do you think? As I come down this board, Cameron Young. Not going to bet him to win. I'm not going to bet him to win, but it's a good transition into a segment that we call Top 20s of the Week.
All right.
And so I'm going to start that session, Keith.
Yeah.
I'm going Mr. Cameron Young, top 20. All I need is just a decent putting week. I like the rest of it. I think he's trending with the rest of it. I think the putter's, I don't know, maybe has a pulse, maybe just like a subtle pulse, but he's going to a place where I think Cameron Young feels comfortable. I think Cameron Young likes the Open Championship. I think this is a guy that likes what it feels like over there, perhaps the slower greens. It certainly bears out when you look at how he's played in the past. I just had it up, then it went down. Do you have his record there? Where did it go?
I do. Hang on one second. It just takes me a second.
Here we go. T8 in a second. That's it. So yeah, T8 in a second. Second in 2022, T8 back in 2023. Yeah. Top 20, good value, Cameron Young. You like that?
I do. Okay. I do. He's looked good in his last two starts. How about this one though? We haven't talked in a while, but I was at Travelers and I was with him on that sub 60 Saturday, right? So he shoots 59. Imagine this. The guy shoots 59 and cumulative on his back nine, he lost strokes putting. Wow. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But he's definitely comfortable over there on the slower greens, the flatter greens because of the wind and everything. I do like Cam Young for a top 20. I do.
Yeah. Right. Why
not? He wouldn't be my first choice in that range, but.
Okay. Who would be?
Adam Scott.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you might go there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like all these guys. I think it's interesting. This is an interesting little group right here when you look at it. Like Cam Young, Fagala. I mean, you could convince me top 20 Fagala.
Ooh.
Adam Scott. I'm not saying I'm going to go Fagala, but I mean, you could. I think there's a case to be made. I would definitely give Adam Scott the nod. I would, you know, why not Brian Harman? You know, he's got three straight top 20s, obviously with a win.
He's been hitting the ball great year. Too. Tee to green.
The ball great.
Really good. Yeah.
I'm comfortable with Brian Harman as a top 20. And that's where it ends for me. Then you get into Fitzpatrick. No. Jordan Spieth. No. Wyndham Clark. No. And then two names that are interesting. All right, here you go. This will be tough for you. Okay.
All right.
Top 20. Do you like
Sung
J.M. or Aaron Rye?
Yeah, I know exactly who you're going to say.
Aaron Rye's playing some damn golf now. Whoa.
Oh, I mean.
Whoa. And M is coming. He's finally playing some golf.
So both of these guys, Sung J.M. is the most mispriced guy on DFS right now. He's down at 6,900. And the guy's coming off six top 12s in his last eight starts. Now, granted, we're in a major, and the only cuts he's missed in those eight starts are both the PGA and the US Open, but everything else has been a top 12. his ball striking has been incredible. He's been really good. And probably the only guy who's been playing better in that stretch run, other than like the elite players like Morikawa and such, has been Rye. Rye's gaining over 9 strokes on the field on average per tournament. It's incredible, right? And he went to what? He went to John Graham. He's been working on his putting, and he's been gaining like by leaps and bounds with his putter week after week. It's impressive. And if the weather gets bad, the guy already wears 2 gloves. So I'll go with Rye, you know? I mean, that's a toss up. I think both are in the top 20, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, those two guys, more so Rye to win than him. You got to get to the window as soon as possible, because Rye's number just keeps getting bet down and down and down. You know, it continues to drop. But
well, that's a different question, right?
But between those two, top 20 for sure. I might take both, but if he said or, then I got to go with Rye, because he's an even hotter hand. And you know, what's he played? A couple opens. He just qualified by his play at the Scottish Open. He got himself in the last 3 guys in, and he's already got a top 20 in the Open. So yeah.
So you're taking Rye over him to okay.
In that top 20 question you just gave me.
I'm happy that Sungjae's finally put it together here. I mean, it just kind of all together. Woke up. Yeah, it kind of all woke up at the same time too. I mean, he finally started making a few putts. His iron game got better, and his short game has been elite.
Yeah.
Watch out, Sungjae.
Yeah,
watch out. I'm telling you, Sungjae sleeper. Cameron Young can be a sleeper here.
Yeah, I don't know
Justin about winning. Justin Thomas. Let me throw a few names at you here.
All right.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable what's going to come out of my mouth right now.
Oh, ready? Boy. It might not be if it's Justin Thomas.
Justin Thomas, 75-1.
I see him at 80 on some boards.
80-1 on some. Max Homa. I see 100. I see 125. Dustin Johnson, 150-1.
Yeah. And DJ has a great open record too.
Jiminy Christmas.
Yeah.
You want to talk about going to live, getting your money, and boarding at Coeur d'Alene Lake with his in-laws, Gretzky's at Gaza Ranch, which I just came from, Coeur d'Alene Lake. You want to talk about just, you know, I mean, you get out there on Sherman Avenue. It's awesome. Lots of places to have some drinks. Go down there to Crickets, the Moose Lodge, the
Beacon. Man, sounds good.
The Beacon.
We got to do a live show from there.
If you ever go Sherman Avenue, I was just there. And it's like the who's who now. Like when I was growing up, it was just like I grew up in Kellogg, which is just over the mountain pass.
Okay.
But there are some great stuff there in Sherman now. Right. I mean, it's kind of the who's who, Gaza Ranch, you know, you got the Gretzky's out there and the Kardashians. And
that's what I don't need.
Yeah. So
I'm all for Wayne, but the Kardashians, I don't
know. Kuchar has a house there.
Oh,
but
there
DJ. Yeah. So when DJ, remember when DJ was suspended? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, rumor has it he was at Gaza basically breaking his own course record like every day. So, yeah, I mean, it's a place, man, you can just go and life's good. Life's
remember
good.
When DJ was suspended? That's great. That's great. and we couldn't figure out if it was from. Well, I'm not going to go there anyway.
So, what was I going? Oh, on Sherman Avenue, right? So, if you ever go for my listeners, you want the best pizza you've ever had? Go to Fire. I'm telling you, you'll thank me later. Right. Unbelievable, Fire. Unbelievable. I was just there 2 weeks ago. It's the best stuff you could ever imagine from a pizza standpoint. There's another place right next. I'm drawing a blank. Crafted.
There you go.
All right. Enough with that. But Dustin Johnson's 150-1. I mean, are you kidding me?
I mean,
Max Homa is 120.
Have you seen Max Homa play recently?
I know. Yeah. No, I get that.
I mean, Max barely made the cut last week.
Can you stretch into now as we get into the hundreds? Is there someone that you would share? Like, look, yeah, sprinkle potentially a little here on a win ticket.
Oh.
want to win. I mean, Hogard, you know, he's European guy, right? He knows how to play links. I've been hearing a little Sepp Straka name. I've been hearing a lot of Louis Oosthuizen.
Those guys are under 100, though, right? Oh, maybe Sepp's over.
Well, Hogard's just over 100. Louis now is at 90.
I could see over 100. I'll give you three guys.
Okay.
I could see a world where Siwoo Kim,
okay,
or Russell Henley or Sam Burns has the win equity in their career to pull it off, that they could do a Brian Harman, right? They have the skill set to do it, and I think that they have the swagger as well, should they get going, and they find that the golf gods are working in their favor, right? Yeah. All the sprinkler heads are aligned. I think that over 100 to 1, those would be guys I might sprinkle $10 on. You know what I mean? $25 on, depending on what level of unit guy you are, or woman for that matter. But up there, I mean, people are gonna throw around a lot. I mean, Nikolai Højgaard wasn't the best Højgaard last week in Scotland. You know, Christian Bezuidenhout, who has been fantastic all year, had a weird withdrawal with an injury. And you know, Captain Keegan, could he be fired up about Bethpage? Sure. And he's ranked 19th in the world, and he's won a major before at 225. There's a world that exists where I could see that too. But man, look at Zalatoris's 225.
That's crazy. Oh, I should have kept going. Yeah, that's another name. It's amazing, right? To say those names, you know, with those, and it will look. Will's coming back from injury, and that's good. I think his golf swing is different. That's taken some time. Dustin. And I love DJ. No one loves DJ more than me, but come on. I mean, this is where we're at, DJ. This is where we're at with our game, you know, right now. It's tough not to draw a different conclusion other than you took the money and run. But anyway, the name that I was looking at last week, I was really intrigued by, was Pavon. And he missed the cut at the Scottish Open.
Yeah, I was on Perez last week instead, his countryman. And I'd still be on Perez over Pavon.
You would. Okay. So Pavon's just interesting. I mean, fifth at the US Open, 12th at the Masters. Of course, he won the Farmers the year before, as we know. I mean, and then going into the Scottish Open, you know, fifth at the US Open, 16th at the Travelers, a couple really good putting. He's just an interesting dude to me. Like the way the
really
guy,
good ball striker.
Really good ball striker. Like just,
yeah.
I don't know if I'd go there to win, but you would take Perez. You're telling me you would take Perez over Pavon in the top 20.
I took Perez last week. I'd do it again. Yes.
Okay. All right.
And I cashed on him. So.
Okay, good. I think that's interesting. That's good. I like that. You mentioned the Højgaards. Rasmus
was slightly better than Nikolai, but there was a lot of Højgaard talk coming into the Renaissance Club. And I would say both were okay, but Rasmus was a little better, which most people were leaning towards the Nikolai side of things. I don't know that either is really look at the signature events, and I know it's easy to point towards Scotty, but look at those leaderboards and then look at the leaderboards of the three majors this year. The big boys are playing some golf, and I think it gets really tough past an Adam Scott or an Aaron Rye or a Louis down here, somebody that is really just a really, really good golfer that could pull it off. I think that the Open has always really rewarded the best guys in the best form.
Yeah.
That's relatively speaking. Even Brian Harman wasn't, you know, 200 in the world when he came in there. You know, he was 12th at the Scottish, then he came in and won. So I think you really need to pay attention to what people have been doing and ride the trend of recent form.
I'll throw one more name out there. I'm not going to bet him. I tweeted it out this morning. Interesting kid. Major, major skill, young Tom McKibben, played up, grew up at the same course that Rory did at Hollywood. And, Rory's kind of take him under his wing. And I think Tom's got a big future ahead of him. I think it's a name that we're going to be seeing for years to come. A lot of time, the U.S. audience is turned on to some of these guys that they don't see every week on the PGA Tour, and it's the first time they've seen them. But I think Tom McKibben will be a name that you will see on the PGA Tour in the next few years. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see him go out and make the cut.
So it's interesting. 20, you bring
21,
up,
21 years of age.
Yeah. So you bring up a young guy that's, you know, catching some media steam. I'm going to take you back to, I'm going to mention a guy who was the youngest guy ever to win the British Amateur. He won it at 16 and he's playing, he's refound his game, and it'd be good for you to do a, he had it, he lost it, he had it again for Matteo Manassero.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Yep.
Because he's sitting out there at 400-1, but I had him last week, top 40 cash, right? Like, he's just one of those guys that right now seems to have found it again. And, you know, at a young age, he knew how to close. That doesn't go away. The game might go away, but that inner confidence he feels when he gets in the stretch. So for all the reasons people are hyped up on McKibben, that's where they were on Manassero, whatever it was 10 years ago. And maybe 15 years ago now, and the guy's refound his game. He's been good on the DP World Tour, and don't be surprised if he's a name that not only makes the cut, but, you know, like I said, top 40, top 30, if you really feel confident about it, maybe a top 20. He's been playing some good golf, and I'd love to see you go through one of those, beginning, middle, and ends, you know, and kind of see the evolution there, because I think it would be a good case study, because he's definitely refound his game. He's been solid.
All right.
Homework for you.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think that's really interesting. All right, scrolling back up. You know, the one name, and I'll finish with this. I was looking back through my notes here that I didn't mention. You know, is this, when does Niemann take the next step? You know, I think that's a name. You know, I don't know if it's here, but, you know, Joaquin, we saw him on the LIV Tour early. You know, he's playing well, got the win. Yeah. And I kind of bought into the smoke a little bit, and I was trying to kind of push it forward. Yeah, okay, Niemann's ready to take, just hadn't seen it. And so, I don't know, what is he, around 51 right now? Is Niemann ready to take the next step as a young player to get into that conversation, win a major championship?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
And I'm not, it certainly wouldn't be this one. I mean, his best finish here is ever is 53rd.
Yeah.
And, Something doesn't line up for him, you know, but super talented player, obviously could do a lot of things. I would probably favor him more at like an Augusta type place based upon, you know, the resume,
right,
Riviera, et cetera. But otherwise, there's better players to bet on, especially in that range.
All right. There you have it. Open champ, fourth major of the year. Unbelievable. Buddy, it's the fourth major of the year.
Yeah.
We're here. It's August next week. Thank God. My kids need to go back to school. We got four more weeks here. They're back to school. I'm going to drop them off and like pick them up in like 5 days.
That sounds like a man who just came off a 2-week vacation right there.
I need a vacation from a vacation. I think the most stressful time in work is when you come back from vacation. I really do.
It's stressful.
Yeah. You just got a lot to like reestablish, you know? Anyway, I'm excited. The podcast is back. We took a few weeks off. We'll be back again next Tuesday. I've got a really cool one we're going to release tomorrow.
Ooh.
And kind of did a deep dive on the winners from last week and also into Henrik Stenson, who won here back in 2016, who was one of my favorite moves, believe it or not. I've always, you know, I mean, obviously Stenson is kind of come and gone. He's on LIV and took his retirement plan, but you know, in his time and when he beat Mickelson in 16 and his swing, he worked with Pete Cowan. And I've talked to Pete about kind of the things that they worked on. And it was just always it was one of my favorite types of moves. So we did a little deep dive on that too. We'll release that tomorrow before the Open kicks off on Thursday.
Here's a little known fact. I use a forward press to trigger the start of my golf swing because of Henrik Stenson.
There you go.
To this day. Because it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Well, three wood. No one hit a three wood better, probably in the history of the game, arguably.
Oh, God.
Keith Stewart at Read the Line. Back next Tuesday.
Peace.